The following podcast is an Embassy Row production.
Hey everyone, welcome to Scissoring Isn't a Thing. It's Darren Karp.
And Liz Cully.
Ooh, so smooth today,
like jazz.
Liz Cully.
Smooth jazz. We have a very special guest that I've been dying to have an interview.
We both have a connection to her, this person from the same avenue.
We do. Do you want to tell everybody?
No, I want you to tell them.
Oh, because I'm like the newest.
I don't know. I just thought it was cute to say that.
Yeah, we are all co-hosts on the Taylor Strucker Show. We have Emma Woman today.
How
everyone.
You doing? Woo, woo, woo. Hey, girl, hey.
Boom, 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 boom. Oh,
yeah,
God. Hey,
oh,
girl,
God,
hey.
No, don't give that life, Emma.
You don't? You don't like it?
No, I always do. It's funny because when Andy, like, he's, you know, he'll be like, what are you doing this morning? I'm like, oh, I'm going on Taylor Strucker Show. And he'll be like, hey, girl, hey. And Taylor dies for it.
Of course she does.
She dies for it. Yeah. So I'm like, no.
I would never say that phrase if it wasn't for Taylor. But now
totally,
I do it. And I feel very comfortable doing it. But there's been times after shows I'm trying to see if it's like one of Taylor's people after a show. So I'll be standing there going, hey, girl, hey. Like some weird robot just saying it. And then then I had to catch myself because I was like, oh, people that don't know from the show, they just think that's what I say. And no offense to it, but it's just not something I would.
It's not your brand.
It's not what I would say. Yeah. I wouldn't
However,
say that.
Speaking of things you say in your brand, uh-oh, when I joined the show,
oh, Lord,
I didn't know. I mean, you guys have been on the show for
long
years.
Time. Yeah.
And I'm a weirdo. We all know the story. If you haven't listened to our podcast with Taylor Strucker, go ahead and listen to it. I'm not going to repeat a story because we know listeners don't love that.
It's true. They don't
like that. Taylor and I met when we were kids. We all came back together, right? But I'm still like brand fucking new. I don't know. Other than Darren, I didn't know anybody else. And all of a sudden, these people started. No, I don't know if you know this, Darren. I would get these fucking messages in my DMs like, oh, yeah, your wife is the man one. Like,
oh, God,
all this crazy shit. Uh-oh. And I was like, what? I'm like, I'm about to flash on somebody. And then they're like, oh, no, it's something that Emma says. And I was like, oh, well, let me, I don't know her. So let me go Google it. And I watched your stand up and it is really funny.
I appreciate
Wasn't it on Conan?
I did it on Colbert.
Or what did I watch it on? Colbert, that's it. Right, sorry.
I did it on Colbert, and then I did it on Netflix, too. And then I did that joke for like a year and a half afterwards, and I always made a big deal of it. But then, this is the thing. That's like a trick. It's a real nuanced situation where I'm trying to deconstruct something and reconstruct and make fun of myself. That's a big ask on my end of people humor-wise. And I got in trouble. Or I didn't get in trouble. I don't care if I get in trouble. I got this producer I was working with on something. He was like, I'm doing a reality show in Maine. And he was like, I was telling the other producers about you. And he's a straight, cis straight guy. He's like, and I quoted your man one thing. And it was, his boss is gay. And his boss got really mad and was basically like, I'm not into this at all. And he had to show them the joke. And he was like, get it. And he's like, it's still negative. Which you shouldn't, I have been thinking about that man one stuff a lot. I am the man one, but I hope that I can like evolve and grow beyond that. So I'm sorry that must have been very confusing.
Well, we've talked about like comedy. No, it was fine. Yeah. I don't mean to say it in that way, but when we talk about like comedy evolving, and I know I want Darren to chime in here. I didn't find it offensive, but once I watched, and I was like chuckling on the couch, and that's when I texted you.
Yes.
I was like, hi, I'm a complete weirdo and your comedy is cool. And you're like, who the fuck is this person? But anyway, but I appreciate that you see that comedy needs to evolve, but that is how I got introduced to you.
But
Darren,
isn't
take it away.
Isn't comedy like supposed to be a little offensive? I mean,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it supposed to like play on a stereotype? I mean, they exist for a reason. From what I gather, you weren't saying that like every lesbian couple has specific gender roles, right? Like you were just saying like in yours, you weren't saying like every single lesbian couple is this exact way.
Sure.
But like, okay, what do lesbians bring on a second date is a U-Haul. That's a classic joke of something that's based in absolute truth, even if it's not true for me. Like,
absolutely.
I can still find it funny and being offensive. So yeah, I'm not a stand-up at all like you. I'm an observer of culture, and I just feel like comedy loses its edge if it's too PC about any one thing.
Yeah. And I mean, and
so
part
how
of
do
it,
you navigate that as like a gay woman?
It's part of
and
it.
And also
too,
how do you identify? Because I'm assuming it's gay, no, but yeah, then yeah, I can't make that assumption.
Could
Emma.
You imagine that happened to me one time? I was interviewing this guy who was, for all intents and purposes, like a flaming homosexual. I mean, he was like,
sure,
just flamingly gay. And he was on Inside the Closet, which is a gay show. And he was, I mean, like themed. The fuck was that? Oh, I am so sorry. I'm so
don't
sorry.
Don't we all love? No, don't be. I'm just like,
Emma.
Wait, this is
Emma,
so weird.
Typical gay girl.
Wait,
not knowing tech.
I can tell you exactly what that is. That's so funny. That's an episode of Inside the Closet just started playing on my computer. How weird is that?
Oh, because it's listening. Also, wow, like,
doing scissoring isn't a thing. Yeah. So it was like, fuck you.
I will say, like, God, doing this shit in the quarantine, people don't understand how awkward and weird this all is. So thank you for coming on the show in the quarantine.
I actually
but
love doing
here,
it
continue.
Like
oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. Because it's like cuts down on the all the travel time. But.
Oh, that's true.
This guy is flaming gay. Flaming. Yeah. He's so gay. And it was like halfway through the interview and he's talking about hooking up with guys. And then he's like, I actually am not out. And we were both, me and my co-hosts were like, oh, and we tried to not be like, what? Yes, you fucking yes. Yeah, you are, buddy. Yeah, you are. So we were like, oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Wow. We're so honored. You wanted to felt comfortable coming out on with us, like blah, blah, blah. And he was like, yes, yes, yes. And then afterwards we got an email and he was like, actually, I'm not quite ready to come out. Can you edit that out? Which, of course, but also we were like, okay, dude, like that's the whole thing. And then we learned, then we were like, okay, we need to ask right away, how do you identify and what are you comfortable with identifying as publicly?
Right.
So, but yeah, I say gay, you know, lesbian, gay.
But would you say queer?
You know, I personally don't, that's not like a go-to one, but that is okay with me. I mean, I think of gender, race, class, and gender, socialized realities. And so words are just like a talking point to convey, move forward concepts. But so queer, I'm all for it. It's just not, I am queer. I don't know. For some reason, I just.
It's not your own moniker. It's not what you're using. Ooh. I wouldn't use it for myself.
So this is, you know what's funny?
I would say gay lesbian. Yeah. Like, that's fine with me. I mean, I wouldn't be offended by queer, but I wouldn't choose that as the word I'm
using. Yes, exactly. Well put.
It's too vague for me.
As LA as this sounds, well, I almost like that it's vague. Okay, hear me out.
That's part of the point of it, you know, for sure.
Yeah, and I think
it's
like
definitely part of the point of
when
it.
People see me on the street or out, they assume that I like live in Brentwood or whatever the fuck they assume. Do you know what I mean? And
I
then
love Brentwood.
Yeah, me too. I like would die to live there. But also like, you know, I think they assume like I am married to a dude named Chad.
Sure, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Just to like bring in the fucking Taylor Strucker vibes, right? So my acupuncturist one time was like, I don't know, we were just talking about this.
My acupuncturist makes you seem like you have a husband named Chad. Just
I know,
FYI.
But my acupuncturist is literally like,
oh, I love acupuncture. I'm all for
He's one of the loves of my life. If you want his information, Emma, he's a fucking life changer.
But maybe okay, I appreciate fine. That.
Anyway, but Russell, who's actually a huge, really interesting, he's also a very well-published writer, long story long, he looked at me and he's like, you're like the queerest person I know. And I was like, me? What? And I'm wearing like ballet flats. I'm like, really? I don't think I look like fucking a broke Reese Witherspoon. But like, I don't see that as being queer. But
that
again,
is queer,
maybe that's queer. Maybe that is what queer is.
That
is that
means
it's,
other
that
things
it is this-
about you were so queer. It subsidized any sense
yeah,
of not.
Right. Yeah. I was like,
yeah, maybe you're right.
I don't know. Queer's too vague for me because it doesn't, like, to your point about them being constructs, right? And there's terms that we use as sort of like breadcrumbs along the way to keep the path going forward, right? Like, vague words don't help a conversation because we need to have some specificity in order to talk about the thing that we're talking
not
about.
Not to be a weirdo. What did you study in college? You study English in college? You speak real good.
No, thank you. I speak real good. As a gay, queer person, I can speak real good.
Did you study
I studied neuroscience in college.
Oh.
No, but I'm, Yeah.
No, actually, Emma, I studied English and journalism and can barely put a fucking sentence together.
I get it.
Knowledge isn't for everyone, folks.
This one over here, it's like, she'll just drop some. What are you? You do have some words that you'll like stick to, which I love. And then I'm one of those people that absorbs other people's vibes.
Totally.
So I'll like say their slang or whatever.
Totally.
But this one over here, it's like formidable.
Woo!
Or like whatever the fuck Darren says.
Formidable.
That's right. That's right.
If I use that in a
moniker.
Sentence, when you said moniker, I did note that. But if I use formidable in a sentence, my girlfriend would be like, who are you talking to? What are you trying to do? What do you want right now?
Get out of here. You're going on a date with because
exactly.
You're not learning that from me.
Right, exactly.
But my point is that like if I met Liz and she was like, I'm queer, it wouldn't really help me. Not that it's her job to help me, right? I'm not saying that, but in my mind, I still wouldn't really know if that could still mean she's into men, right?
Oh,
because like bisexual is queer,
right?
But that might not be how she means it. So I don't know. Is she pansexual? Is she just gender non? I don't.
Do you think
these terms sometimes I get?
Do you think if someone says bisexual, then you'd more associate that with being like, oh, they like penis men, or would you think if they say queer, if someone said queer, I think they were like more like. Not going in that direction. Bisexual, I think of as, because bisexual sounds a little more mainstream. Does that make sense?
I think that's what it is, which in and of itself is, you know, we have to evolve out of those things too. I'm just saying how when I think of a bisexual person, it's like, I know the signals in the environment to make me be able to communicate effectively, maybe with a bisexual person than I would with queer, because it's so vague that I worry about whatever I say, to your point about your comedy routine, is going to be offensive.
Yes, there
is that. It
just
feels like one of those words that's like, fuck you, I'm waiting for you to be.
And there's such the such the stereotype of that, so I'm in Louisiana right now. My girlfriend has an Airbnb here. We're quarantining here. I make a point everywhere I go, this is so weird, because I look gay, look queer, whatever. And I feel like this is all internalized, that sometimes people might perceive that as me waiting to get offended for, even though it would be for justifiable reasons, whatever. So I make a point, like anytime I've interacted with someone social distancely, to let them know I eat meat. Because to me, that seems like I don't get as offended. We went to Mother's Day, social distance Mother's Day thing. And right when I came in hot with it, I was like, oh, is that where the meat's going to be? And her uncle goes, do you eat meat? And I was like, ready to play ball, buddy. I'm like, oh, yes, I do. I eat so much meat. I'm trying to eat less meat. I love meat. And I could see my girlfriend being like, oh my God. Because I had told her.
Yeah,
I was
like overcompensating, yes, Emma. Like,
I
relax. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, I was like,
fuck the
fucking.
Oh my God.
I told her,
I'm
like,
dying.
I'm going to make a point out of the meat. And she was like, why? No one cares. And I'm like, they do. And I think I'm right, because he said, well, I know how vegetarians like to hang out together. And I was like, maybe so. I know what you're saying, but I love meat. And I felt like that. It's a stretch,
oh God,
but I felt
I'm
like
dying.
It kind of subsidized that notion that someone could be waiting to be getting offended, even though I'd probably side with why they were offended. They're
totally.
Probably totally right.
But that's your point. I feel like comedy breaks the tension, right?
That's exactly that literally is what it is. It's like you build up, you're supposed to build up, oh my God, I really should know this. You're supposed to build up an assumption. There we go. You're supposed to build up an assumption and then misdirect that. It's like the most bait. Someone said, there's this comedian, Missy Baker. She's this joke. I love it. I love it so much. I literally tried to buy it from her and she was like, no, Emma, I love this joke. And I'm going to kind of botch it, but she's like, every time I go to the gym, I always pull something, the fire alarm. And then she acts out herself being outside, like, aren't we just here to make friends anyway? So she's building up the assumption that she's going to pull a muscle, but then it's the fire alarm.
Right.
And I just...
It's a redirect.
Love that. I don't even think she does comedy anywhere. I just love that. I just think it's so...
That's a good joke.
Yeah, it's cute.
I mean, Hannah Gatsby kind of describes that whole tension building thing in Nanette when I saw her do it live at the Soho Playhouse.
Oh, did you see it live?
It's a...
Yeah, that was live.
Everybody dark as fuck, though, right?
You met her? Okay, first of all, for those of you guys that don't listen to the Taylor Strucker Show, I get fucking red for being a name dropper, which is true and also funny. Y'all just really went like hard in the paint on the lesbian name drop. Emma's like, I've met her. You're like, I went to see it live. And I'm like, great. I watched it like a month and a half later on Netflix on somebody else's password.
I haven't watched it.
I've only seen it live.
Like, it's on my brother's Netflix, which is like Big Dog Rich 8420. Like, fuck myself. I don't know.
If you name dropped whose Netflix it was, though, that would have been real. If you were like, I watched it, someone else with Netflix.
Yeah, that would have been, that would have counted. My point is, in the net, she describes about building that tension, right?
Right,
and
right.
just like ripping you to shreds. And so,
sure.
I don't know. Like, I hope comedy doesn't change sort of in the offensive market.
I mean, also,
because you're never not going to be offensive.
You're never not going to be
it's
because
impossible.
There has to be something that people join together to then have that understanding to then laugh at. So it can be the person or it cannot. Now, I haven't watched all of Nanette. I watched the beginning of it. And I was the first 20 minutes. I was like, this is funny. And then everyone was like, well, it takes a turn, a very important turn.
Big time.
I haven't seen the turn. However, to thinking of changing comedy, I mean, she in terms of making the offensive and PC stuff. She also, that was a very bold move to put her, that show under the umbrella of stand-up when it was definitely a one-person show. And she wasn't thinking of quitting comedy. Every stand-up comedian I know says, I'm going to quit comedy. She beat them to the punch. So she just beat them to the punch. And I think that's why so many people are resentful, where it was like, oh no, she just figured out.
I saw that.
Yeah, I heard that. I thought
which is Emma Willman's new competitive podcast. A scissoring isn't a thing. Fingered out.
I've never said that.
You guys want to be a guest on my podcast? Yeah, right. I'm
fingered
like,
out. She figured out.
That could actually be an amazing, like, new reality. Like,
show.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say it's like singled out. Like, you're the host. We could even bring Jenny McCarthy back.
Yeah. Oh,
you're there.
Man.
It's all a bunch of les.
That's right.
Let's that was finger funny. It out, guys. Just finger it out.
Yeah, exactly.
She figured out how to beat to the punch of capitalizing on the idea of quitting comedy. I haven't seen it yet, though, so I can't comment on it too much. But if
well,
one more
you have
person,
another special to watch, you've got multiple.
I know, but this is what, does this ever happen with you guys? Like, if too many people tell me to watch something and I'm going to like it, I almost 100%. Get resentful at the thing.
I felt about Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen when I saw them on Broadway. I was like, everyone fucking loves this thing. I'm going to hate it.
Right.
I'm going to hate it. Like, I'm going in knowing I'm going to hate it. I ended up loving it. But I was ready to fucking hate it.
I love how your answer is Hamilton on Broadway. I was going to just say Orthodox. Like, I just can't bring myself to watch
that. That's a good show.
I know, but I like every time I'm in the Netflix queue, I'm like, how about I watch Great British Baking Show again instead?
Is Orthodox the show with the guy who leaves?
Well, Unorthodox is a scripted show. I think it's called Unorthodox.
Yeah, or sorry, Unorthodox,
Four-part series with Israeli actors about a woman who, because like Williamsburg, Brooklyn's very Hasidic.
Sure.
And so she like flees her community to go to Berlin and like the family follows her.
However, my wife will say this every time I'm like, honey, like actually this happened last night. I was like, honey, I think we really need to watch this show. Like it keeps getting brought up. And she always looked at me. She looks at me and she's like, but do you really want to read tonight? Because it's all subtitles. And
it's
I'm like, good point.
That
do I want to read?
That is
nope, I don't want to read.
No, I don't.
Just getting back to a young Emma Willman. Mm. How old were you when you came out? Or like how old were you when you realized you were into women? Or was that your thought process? Like how did you come out?
Two totally different times. So I think I first started articulating that I was into women. It was like, I mean, I remember always having dreams like I couldn't conceptualize two women together. So I would be like, I'm Aladdin. And then I want to be with Princess Jasmine. So I'd picture being a guy that I saw on TV because like that was like an avenue into women. And then in my head. And then I really knew that I didn't want to have sex, like heterosexual sex. I just, if nothing else, I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I made my poor friends join a pact with me where I said, let's not have sex till we're married, guys. Like, I just think it's really important to wait. And my group of friends, it was four girls and they all are straight. And it was like hard for them to not do, but I was like, come on, we don't want to, come on guys. Like, let's not ruin our lives and have disgusting sex. Where in retrospect, when I came out in college, the first thing my friend Margo said, she was like, that's what that fucking pact was. You were obsessed with us, not all of us not having sex. I did have boyfriends. I did get blowjobs in high school. But I did know.
Ugh, I'm sorry.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know.
My worst nightmare is a blowjob.
It was.
Literally.
I did a bunch of blowjobs. I mean, it wasn't for me, obviously. you know.
Ditto.
It's like, stick. It wasn't something you wanted to do really again.
It's fine.
I mean, I would always come up with any excuse. I'd be like, want to have a threesome? Want to get a hooker? Oh, yeah.
Oh, good for you. I used to do the fucking crazier shit. Good for you.
Yeah, because then I'd be like, you know, we've got to support the sex work industry. Here you go. Like, I'm not sure hooker is right.
I think it's sex work.
It is sex worker. Sorry.
Is it sex worker
but back
hookers?
Then, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
it's
that.
It's sex
either.
Worker.
I didn't know that either.
Here's what I will say. Back then, I said hooker. Today, I say sex worker.
That's a good way to cover that. To be like, I know I was quoting myself back in the day, and which is really tricky. I was telling
Emma, I'm being honest.
No, I believe it. But it. Oh, I was telling a story about Chaz Bono once, and I was referring to Chaz when they didn't go by Chaz. So I used the name that reflected the story at the time, and I had to really figure out what I was supposed
to say.
That's
tough to navigate.
That's tough. Yeah.
And I didn't do it right. Because I got called out on it. That's how I know to even be like, okay, I didn't do that right.
Are you easily offended as a person? Like if someone in general, as a comic?
No, I don't care. That's actually a problem in relationships. Not getting easily offended, but I just don't care. I mean, when it comes to my career, I care. But my response to pretty much everything outside of career stuff is like, I don't care. I'm trying to make it in show business. That's what it is. So I will fake care because you have to fake care to have relationships. And I do care, but the amount of care I need to have to be a good partner, you know, has been a struggle because my relationship now is great because it that person understands that. But that has been like a problem.
Talk to me about fake caring. Can you give an example of something that
anything like I don't care. Like it's like, oh, we're going to go to dinner. We got to go see my friends fucking this and that and talk about this and that. And I have to be like, oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I care when someone's into something. I really care. I really care about someone's like interests. But when it comes to like going out to eat and what we're going to get for dinner, I don't care. I just don't care about basic like.
Yeah, I hear you.
You okay. know,
it's like why I wear black every day is because like all I really give a shit about is my job. So it's like I want to put the least amount of energy into everything else.
Exactly.
I don't
You're
care.
Like Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I was the Steve Jobs of that because I would be a hell of a lot richer. But the point is that.
Some people,
I think, are only capable of being like 20% into a relationship. And I think that's okay. Like the construct of what a good relationship is like married for 50 years, monogamous, 2.5 kids. And I feel like our generation, people in their 30s, certainly kids in their 20s and younger, are changing that narrative a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I do think, and that's been happening in, let's say, queer, but really gay culture for a long time.
Right,
like monogamy was never the main thing. Like I felt like there were so many other things to also care about. So in some ways I do think that our culture is bleeding into society a little bit
more.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Maybe with-
totally. I think too, the more people that know people that are doing, I guess what was considered alternative lifestyles. And then now it's like morphing into, you know, what constitutes a family and single moms. And then people, you know, grandparents raising kids. But to be easily offended in terms of stand up, no, to me, it's all, however, if it's done, like I can, usually I'll try to be pretty savvy and sensitive to if something's coming from a good place or the context I know the person in, like that to me carries a lot of weight. So I'm not easily offended in that regard at all.
Was there a time in your life, and maybe it was you coming out or sexualizing women where... Like, did you ever have a tough time with it? And if so, like, because for me, like, when I was doing it, it was like, if someone called me a dyke back then, I would have been embarrassed. Now I couldn't give a fuck.
Right.
But, like, back then, when you're, like, 17.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, I was way
you
in
can't
the,
control your emotions. Yeah.
I was way in the closet in high school also because high school, like, my home life was very tumultuous. So my social life in high school was, like, my outlet. So I didn't want in any way to have that shaken. So I was very, very in the closet. I even used to make fun of this girl that was out. These two girls, one was bi, one was lesbian, identifying at the time. I remember I'd always see them and I go, ugh, why do they have to hold hands? Why do they have to like rub it in everyone's face? And I remember my friend Margot was like, you know, she was the same one that was like, why'd you make us all wait to have sex? Like, what the fuck? But she was like, Emma, my mom's best friends are lesbians and you sound really ignorant. Why are you thinking about them so much? Like, what's your problem? And I was like, I just don't like it. I just don't know why they have to hold hands in the hallway. And she was like, they're like minding their own business. Like, you're literally seeking them out to complain about. And I remember being like, bitch. But she was right. So it was. So yeah. I would have been. And there was this guy. this boyfriend of mine who was like, why is Emma so obsessed with this sex, wait till marriage to have sex thing? Because it wasn't like, I wasn't religious, or I wasn't being in other areas. Like, I was drinking, smoke pot. And he was like, I think Emma's gay. And I remember being like, no, I'm not. But instead of getting defensive, I was like, I'm not gay. I'm very comfortable with my sexuality. If I was gay, I'd be okay with it. I had a whole spiel, but I was totally in the closet. And then when I went to college, I went to an all women's school. I think I came out like.
What school did you go to?
Simmons in Boston. Yeah. Nice. All women.
I went to a boarding school right behind Smith College. So I didn't know if it was
there. Did you go
to
North Herman, Northfield Mount Herman? My sister went there.
No, oh. I went to the Williston Northampton School.
Oh, nice. Wait, isn't that, where's that?
In Northampton. Oh. It's like in North, or it's in East Hampton, which is like down the road.
Yep. Beautiful. Yeah. It's so pretty there. I mean, I remember going there when I was in the closet and like being so excited because it's a very like considered a very lesbian dense. I think they would probably use that word too. Area. And I remember being like very excited about that when I was closeted, but I came out in college and I was kind of like ripped out of the closet.
At an all women's college in Massachusetts.
Like the assumptions were so big that it was like, yeah, of course Emma's gay. She's going to an all women's school and she's, or you were just kind of like forced.
It was this girl. I always want to say her name. This girl, I remember meeting her and she was like, you're gay. She's really not what I would never be attracted to this person ever. But I was like, whoa. She was just like, feminine, but like a sneaky feminine where she had like really masculine energy. Like she was like undercover masculine. Like she was in a skirt, but she's like, what's up, buddy? How you doing? I'm not into that. Nah, I don't want a hint. No hint of that. If I go to shake the hand, they turn it like, what's up? Nah. That's not what this is. It's all good, but that's not. So I'm like standing in this field as I remember it. And I just remember her being like, what's up, looking gay? And I was like, I had like long hair at the time. I was like, oh my God, no, I'm not. And then I was like, I can't believe this. Oh my God, this girl's crazy. And then I remember going to a party and she was really drunk and she was like, why are you sitting over there? Every time I retell this, she gets more masculine, by the way. I don't think she was really.
Yeah. Like, she's now become a
I know she was. Like an ogre. Like, an ogre in a kilt. Anyway, okay.
That is how track, I actually basically. Do kind of remember as an ogre in a kilt, though. Shout outs to her. I appreciate that this is how it came out, though. But she was like, why aren't we making out? We're just sitting there. We should be making out. And she was making out with other girls. And I was kind of like, eh. And then I remember going to the closet with her and I was like, make out. And she was like, you're gay. And then I was like, no.
Wait, hold on. Let me just stop you. You just went, blah, 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 blah. You went into a closet with her to make out?
Yeah, at this party.
Okay.
She was in.
With the ogre in a kilt. Yes. You and the ogre in a kilt because making out in a closet. Just wanted
because
to.
Because you just wanted to like hook up with a woman or you like ogres?
No, I think she was pressuring her, right?
There was some pressure involved, but also I was like excited by the opportunity. I did know, and I remember with this, I remember being like, I would never date this person. I would never want to be with this person. But I was like, but I know this is what I want to be doing. And that was the first person I actually had sex with, too. And I like would never spend the night. I would always like sneak out. I remember we were watching Requiem for a Dream, which is an awful movie to like have sex
really,
to.
I was just going to say, really puts you in the mood.
Yeah, Ellen
Burstyn, my God.
Like literally dying and decaying in front of you. Yeah.
Wow. I'm open-minded. Like I'm extremely open-minded. You could, if someone's into something, I'll get turned on by that like essence of desire. Like that's what I like. So if someone literally was like, oh my God, I want to get fucked to watching Requiem for a Dream. I'd be like all about it. No questions asked. However, that it wasn't like that. It was like, she was like, let's watch Requiem for a Dream. It's a good movie. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like she was into that.
Crushing beer cans on her forehead and shit. Yeah.
She's like,
this is the person you lost your virginity to. Oh, yeah. Like, you made all your friends wait, and then you lost your virginity to someone you described.
To Shrek. You literally lost your virginity
to Shrek. That's the irony of this entire conversation. That's the irony that is Emma Willis.
Toad, the hint of an opportunity, the hint of her being like, what's up? I'm like, all right, fine. So.
Yeah. You know my name.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
I love that. I love that about you. You know me. Yeah, Emily. It's Emma, but I get it. We had sex for a little while, and then I met someone else, and then that's when I start. And then the first girlfriend I had was like, she was so great. To this day, one of the best girlfriends I've ever had, Erica. We're still like friendly, but she was awesome. But that was when I came out when I was with Erica, because then I had like a girlfriend I wanted to be like, this is my girlfriend.
How long did you guys date for?
We dated a while, and then I cheated on Erica. So Erica was more androgynous. She was really cute, but she was more androgynous. And she was such a good girlfriend, though. Oh, my God. She was great. But I remember seeing this girl, and then someone was like, that girl's girlfriend is named Joanna. And I go, that girl is a lesbian? They go, yeah. I go, really? And that's when I started dating, like, very feminine women. So, because I said, oh, she's with that too. But, And then I remember she was 2 years older than me. She was a great girlfriend too. I had great girlfriends in college, real class.
Oh, so you cheated on the girlfriend, yes. Then started dating the femme one immediately.
But wait, pause there. Are you saying that even though Erica was a great girlfriend and she's cute, she's androgynous, but you weren't attracted to her, but the reason that you were attracted to her is because you didn't know there were more feminine women to be attracted to who were gay?
I actually was attracted to Erica. I really was. Like, Erica, like, we had like a lot of fun. Like, it was a genuine attraction, truly. But when I saw that, that could be someone that was also queer too, that like switched something, and I was like, that's what I'm talking about. But it wasn't like I was like, oh, I gotta stomach it with Erica. Like, Erica was great. Like, man, if I could have been like, she was, I mean, that's like literally like 170 girlfriends back, but like, she was just a good person. Like, she was nice and interesting and motivated. Like, she was great. But
where is Erica now?
Yeah, what's going on there?
Erica lives in Vermont with her girlfriend. Classic. And she likes more feminine women, too. So, like, right after we broke up, we both were, and I apologize to her about the cheating, but right after we broke up, then we, like, a year later I did, but then we both at that time started being with much more feminine. I'd say she's kind of soft butch-ish, I would say.
Okay, soft butch. Yeah. I would describe myself as a lipstick lesbian, which is
chapstick.
I'm sorry, chapstick.
Chapstick lesbian, yeah.
Not a lipstick.
Yeah. I was like, the fuck?
Yeah, definitely not. Look at me today. I want to just go back actually to the original thing that you said in high school when, you know, you were like, oh, they're holding hands, or like, why do they got to show off? Like, we often talk about on the show, like, internalized homophobia and like how you're kind of, it's not necessarily like I wasn't raised in a homophobic environment at all, but for some reason it kind of is that embarrassing thing of like, oh, I don't want to be seen holding hands. What do you think is the reason behind that? And do you attribute that to internalized homophobia?
I'm wondering, it's so curious where internalized homophobia does come from, because I am from such a supportive environment in terms of sexuality, like big time. My mom hates entertainment. So she does not like comedy. Now, maybe fine, tolerable, does not like comedy, couldn't be like less into that, but couldn't be more. It's like, I thanked her once, like years later, I was like, you know, thank you so much for just being unwaveringly supportive of sexuality. And she was like, well, what's
that supposed to mean? Why wouldn't I be? What's your problem?
And I was like, no, I didn't have a problem, but I'm just saying thank you for doing that. And she was like, yeah.
What do you think?
And I was like, nah.
She was more disappointed about you becoming a comedian than you being gay.
I mean, the level of that not fitting into the narrative of her, of what was like in her world is huge. But I mean, one of her best friends, I think I was in like third or fourth grade, was this pretty prominent lawyer in Boston. And then he transitioned. And she's like, yeah, transitioned. And I remember trying to have a conversation with her when I started understanding like gender more. I was like, you know, she transitioned and she did have that surgery, but she could still have a penis and be a woman. And I remember my mom being like, what? And I was like, see, she could still have the penis, but that's not when she was like, okay, now I'm out. And like, that was, that's where it stopped. Cause I remember she was like, well, she had the surgery and she is a woman now. She had the surgery. And I was like, actually, what I learned in school was that, no, you could not do that and still be identify however. And she was like, I just saw it. That's kind of where it stopped for her. But
yeah,
she was. So the internalized homophobia didn't come from my mom or my dad, but I think it comes from just, you know, wanting to fit in and not. There were other reasons I felt like very like othered as a kid. I was really chubby, dyslexic. My parents had a very, very like dysfunctional divorce. It was very like chaotic. So there was other things I was kind of closeted by as well. And I remember in high school thinking like, I don't think being gay is even in the top four of things that I'm kind of like repressing. So, right. And I remember being very conscious of that. And then when I got to college, I felt like it was very like a natural thing. And then I always had like a lot of straight friends in college too. And even with comedy, I always kind of tried to be like, okay, you don't want to go up through the gay route because then the straight people won't necessarily come around. But if you go up through the straight route, then usually the more the gay people will come around. I don't know if that's right, but.
No, I mean, I think that's an interesting take on things. I was going to ask you, but you know, with your comedy.
It might be internalized homophobia that I say that. It really might be. I don't know. I can't totally trust
it. I think we all, listen, I think we all have a touch of internalized homophobia because let's be honest, being gay was not okay for
sure. So
people were being killed. People are still being fucking killed for being gay, right? And so a lot of people lose relationships for, you know, whatever, however they identify in a lot of different ways.
Sure.
When you started doing comedy, two-part question. When did you start kind of exploring comedy and doing comedy? And then was your gayness kind of always a through line to your comedy or did that develop over time?
I think I was actually more like, you know, I never thought about, I didn't wear makeup. I wore much more like men's clothing. By the time I graduated college, like I was not thinking about presentation at all. So whether or not that translated to like wearing makeup and doing things more associated with femininity, which should be deconstructed anyway, I wasn't thinking about that. It was actually through being in entertainment that's when I started being like, no, that's too gay. That's too gay. No, not for that. Can't do that. Because I started being in the system more and being like, oh shit. Look, right now there's a ton of like very masculine. It's like the lesbian Hunger Games out here right now in comedy. It really is. And I've noticed they're all getting bigger and butcher. So I've actually been trying to like take better care of myself in contrast to that.
You're eating that meat. You're getting swole.
That's right. Getting that protein in,
yeah,
girl.
Trying. Yeah. But it like, I definitely started feeling more internalized homophobia, where that really started coming in actually was doing more stand-up because I'd be like, oh, I don't know if this is too gay. Or I was doing all like colleges and schools in the South, which actually was never, the South was always a wonderful experience for performing in my experience. But the first time I did stand-up was at this friend of mine, who's a trans guy. It was at his queer poetry. So you could have just said queer open mic, but it's queer poetry open mic. Of course it's poetry. Queer poetry open mic. I did stand up at that. And I remember I was kind of drunk and I was like, oh, that was fun. And I signed up for comedy at a club, this club in Boston. It's not there anymore. It's called Dick Doherty's. And it's like a very blue collar, like real heteronormative space. And I went into it. And right when I went in, I was like, I just remember being like, oh, I don't know if I'm good enough at stand up to build the bridge that I need to, because they're going to be like, this person looks different. Can I build that bridge? No, I sucked. I bombed. I got heckled. Someone was like, you look like a dude. I didn't know. I had no tools. I was like, oh. And then I remember the host kind of like dealing with it, but it was an awful, awful experience. And I remember walking around after that being like, ooh. Oh boy. So it definitely was a through line, but it was something that became much more like, I started being much more like self-conscious about with entertainment, I would say.
Yeah. What's it like being in the lesbian stand-up Hunger Games? Like, well, have you made any friends?
Yeah. I mean, I've got I try to like keep it not, you know, like Netflix was doing this like gay comedy thing. And I was like, don't put me in the ring for that. Like my representation at the time,
why?
I don't want that being the number. I mean, then after I
saw. Sometimes it's, sorry to interrupt, but isn't it sometimes the difference between being a gay comedian and a comedian who's actually gay?
Sure, exactly.
Big difference.
That's how I was interpreting it, exactly. I mean, then I had some friends doing it and I was like, oh, hey, why didn't they ask me to do that? And they're like, well, you said not to even submit you for it. I'm like, I know, but they should ask. Why they ask? And they're like, I mean.
Right.
But I remember like not specifically not wanting to do that. But again, that could be internalized homophobia. And it's all a privilege for me to be picking and choosing, because I know if I was like a person of color, I wouldn't be able to be like, well, I don't want to be, you know, I can get a little bit more leeway with, you know, how I can like, what's the word, hide or something. Like I the other day I took a social distancing boxing class and I'm in Louisiana. My girlfriend comes to pick me up and someone goes, Emma, your ride's here. And I go, oh, yeah, my friend. And then I went, oh, my girlfriend. And they were like, okay, whatever. But I said friend, and I'm 34 and I'm like very out of the closet. So that it's just, I was surprised that I did that, actually.
I'm not going
to
lie.
Were you reading the room? I mean, were you saying to yourself stereotypically, I'm in fucking Louisiana.
I'm in Louisiana at a Christian boxing gym. It's called Anointed Hands. So,
for me, sometimes it was like saving my life. You know, like we talked to Reza. We always bring up Reza's episode because like, he's Iranian and, you know, he had friends that were killed in Afghanistan for being gay. So his experience of coming out was a lot different than mine from Montclair, New Jersey. But, you know, he was sort of saying, I said, would you ever recommend not coming out? And he was like, yeah, if your life is at risk. And to some extent, even though you and I and Liz might be the outest fucking people, I'm still reading the goddamn room because it's not worth it.
And it's human
nature.
You know,
someone was like, you faggot. Yeah, you wouldn't, it wouldn't be worth saying friend then to me.
The lady I buy my fish from thinks I have a husband. I don't have the heart to tell her.
And you don't want to go to a new you don't want to go to a new fish lady?
I can't go to a new fish lady. The fish is so fucking good. I told Rachel about, I was like, oh my God, she got me a present. It said like to you, the miss and the mister or mister and missus. I was so mortified. I didn't know. I actually want to know what social distance boxing is like. Sorry. I like,
have you ever been in a relationship with someone who wasn't out when you were?
Yes, absolutely. And also I actually dated someone. This was really eye opening. I dated someone, she was from Saudi Arabia, and she was like, you know, the royal family there is very big, so you could meet someone who's, there's lots of prince and princesses, but she was royalty over there, like in that big family. And man, I prayed for her that she was bisexual, because I was like, oh, I hope, I mean, if she came out, that type of money is just so even like foreign to like American wealth. Like it's like I remember one time she was really drunk and she came over and she parked her car, which was this BMW. And she came upstairs, and I remember we were kissing, and then she kind of stopped, and she was like, how do you feel about this, knowing that Allah will strike us down? And I was like,
oh my God.
I was like, you know, I don't interpret it like that. And she was like, yeah, but like, how do you, and she was so sincerely asking, she's like, but that Allah will strike us down, like, how does that make you feel with what we're doing? And I was like, well, okay, let's get you some water. And like, I was like, I'm like, and then I remember I was like, we're not going to go back to
take a nap, sweetie.
I don't know if
I don't know
if that's worse than Requiem for a Dream bless her heart. Oh God.
But that's a different reality.
And Requiem for the Dream, we had sex to that, but with that one,
threat of Allah, you're not necessarily horny.
Exactly. And so, I remember the next morning, she got a taxi home, and the next morning she called, she's like, someone stole my BMW. I can't believe it. Like either they stole it or I lost it. So I'm going to go to the store now and get a new one. I was like, you left your BMW outside my apartment. And she was like, oh, I didn't. I was like, yeah. I was like, you go to the store and get a new one? Like, you could attract it. Like, what the, like, so many layers of, like, what are you talking about? God.
Right, like, that would be the last option.
Also,
who
calls an auto dealership a store?
Store.
I'm like, that's the place where they check my credit, fuck it up, can afford it.
Totally. But I remember thinking, like, okay, these, and maybe actually she said, but it was like, okay, these are also, like, shackles around her ability, because if she was going to come out, she would be leaving this lifestyle that, because she would have been, she was like, she said she had one cousin who was gay, but he was like banished to living in London and he was cut off. And she was like, that's not an option. And she was like, also, he's a guy. It's different, but it's not okay, but it's different. She's like, it's just so not an option for me. And that made me be like, wow, I'm so grateful that I am able to be out too, because I mean, that's awful. One time she told me that she was like, and she had a boyfriend. He was so nice, such a nice guy. But she was like, you know, we were making out the other day and his penis got hard. So, you know, we took out the Quran and then I cried until it went down. And I was like,
Emma. Just made me lose my boner for
I just dropped my microphone. I was like,
well, I mean, any extreme religion in general terrifies me. Like just across the board. And I've talked about this with Taylor Strecker too on her show. I'm open about it. We're just like, organized religion scares me because no organized religion is accepting of me as.
What about like Episcopals, or what aren't Jewish people and Unitarian? Yep.
I mean, listen, yeah. there's, but I'm talking about like extreme organizationalism. Extreme, yeah, I'm not yeah, talking yeah, about yeah. like, I mean, like, I'm Jewish. Right. I'm Jewish. Like culturally, I'm not talking about like the Hasidim
right,
are
right.
not okay with gay people. Right, you know, right. they're not okay with like women
right,
in general.
Right, right,
so I'm talking
right.
about like extreme anything totally. Terrifies me. But like, how did you?
Her and I just dated. We weren't in a relationship too, but I remember really when she said that, because she was trying to say that to me, like, you know,
right.
and I was just, I felt so sad for her when she said that, because I was like,
I wish that I had done that every time a guy asked me to give him a blowjob, though.
I've been like, Allah is striking.
I just wish I had pulled out a Bible or something, a textbook, and just been like, let's take a beat.
Right.
But oh. It's hard to work through that, though.
Yeah, it is.
It's not just saying to that person, like, no, being gay is okay, because they're so indoctrinated by that reality
right.
that
right.
you're just viewing it completely differently. Like,
totally.
I can't imagine what sex would be like if I thought God was going to smite me forever for it. Like,
strike you down.
I've been friends with Emma Willman not having sex until marriage and been okay
right.
with it.
It's, right. such a, it's so sad.
I'm like, sure, no problem. I will keep it in my pants for this long.
Totally.
Right.
Ugh,
totally.
Is she okay? Did you guys keep in touch?
Yeah.
No, we didn't keep in touch. I actually, what kind of really ended it was, I remember being at her place. We were like studying and her boyfriend came by and he was like, oh, babe, I brought you this food. And she was like, there's rice in it. And then she just started yelling at him. And she was so pissed about the rice that when he left, I was like, was that about the rice? Or are you putting on him the fact that you're gay and you need to be with him? And she was like, I didn't think about that. I was like, I actually felt so bad for him that I was like, I need to exit this situation because I don't want to watch this guy. Like, get, yeah. he was so sweet. He was probably gay. Like, he was like so, like this sweet little guy, like so confused. And I was like, this, I'm in so far over my head with all this stuff. So we lost touch. And then I sent her a clip when I started doing stand-up, which is a really tacky move on my end, but she was hearing impaired. She read lips. She's very, very, she's beautiful, but not that those things would be exclusive
but
in any way.
But she was deaf, so she can't be good-looking and deaf. That's
oh, my God, stop. I'm literally trying to hide but for all
first,
the listeners.
I said it first.
I'm literally bright red.
It's anyway. Yeah. It's fine. It's her. It's
I'm
her.
Trying to hide.
She was hearing impaired, so she would read lips. So it didn't occur to me that when I sent her the stand-up clip, she wrote me back and she was like, Emma, like, I can't understand it. There has to be subtitles. And I was like, ooh, I'm really striking out over here. I was like,
I'm
so sorry. So now I try to subtitle. I try to like remember to subtitle stuff too. But so our last interaction was me saying, I'm so sorry. I'll figure out how to do subtitles. And then we haven't spoken now in, man, I don't know, long time, 15 years or something.
Wow.
Whoa.
I hope she's like, okay.
I think, hopefully. I hope so.
I hope.
She's rich. She went to the store. She's to get a car.
Yeah, well, I mean,
like,
but that doesn't
good.
Mean you're okay.
No, you know? I know. Like, fair.
You know,
fair.
And then,
right.
you know, and a lot of people, I mean, I think a lot of people, to your point, although it's a different time, the housewives in the 40s and 50s and 60s, it's not like there's more gay people now, right?
Yeah.
There's just more out people now.
Absolutely.
And I feel like they were, it's like, I can choose to live in this lifestyle that's easier, that has a man take care of me post-war,
right.
have kids, blah, 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 blah. Or live this gay life. And a lot of people choose to be closeted because they want to go to the store to get a BMW.
Yeah.
And that can be a forced choice that they have to make, but in some situations it can be a choice.
And it's hard to go against your family too. I mean,
I get that very much. Yeah. Sometimes it's not an easy thing to choose it. I mean, I always want to say like, choose you, whatever that means for you.
Mm.
Choose you, whatever that means for your happiness. My follow-up to you is, have you ever been in a situation, maybe in comedy or maybe just in general, I know it's a little bit of lesbian Hunger Games right now, where being gay has been an advantage for you?
Oh, yeah. Big time. Definitely. And I've dated people that were in the closet like at work before too. Never mind the work. I mean, oh, fuck. I did date someone that was totally in the closet and that was awful, actually.
I bet.
I totally forget about that. But she worked in entertainment.
You've repressed this memory. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She worked in entertainment on the business side. So she was like, no one can know we're together because we could get in trouble. And I was like, totally. And I was like, and at the time, she had way more leverage. So I was like, yeah, totally. And then after a while, I was like, but if you have to tell your friends that aren't in entertainment, because if we hang out, I feel weird lying. And she didn't. And that's why we broke up. She had gay friends that didn't know. And I was like, look, if I'm going to spend time with your friends, if I'm going to go to dinner one-on-one with your friend, then I can't lie to them. Like, will you tell your friend who's gay or your friend who's straight, who is so would not care? And I remember telling one of her friends after like a year, I was like, you know, and she told me she did tell her. And I said, and I was like, you know, da-da-da and I are in a relationship. She was like, no, I didn't. She's like, that makes so much sense. I keep trying to set her up. And she said she won't. And I was like, and we live in a studio apartment. Like there's only,
you guys
like,
live together?
We live together. And she had like people over and like, it was so
Wait. Did you choose to live with her knowing that she wasn't out?
Yeah, she moved. So it was supposed to be temporary where it was like she was going to live with me until she found her own place. And then we just ended up
classic
living together.
Classic lesbian story. Yeah, that is classic. Oh, it was just temporary. Right? Just no. a two-month stint.
Totally. Yeah. 100%. It was like ill-conceived. But I gave it a lot of buffer because I was like, well, she needs to be in the closet for work. But it was very clearly that was not the case at all. It was a smidge of that mixed with total internalized homophobia in her end. And I remember being like, this is really destructive. And I like relationships are hard enough, let alone you not being comfortable with your sexuality. Like, how are we supposed to have any move forward?
Well, how
can
you get deep? Know? Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, so yeah, how can you form real intimacy? But and back to the original one, how has being gay maybe helped you or been an advantage in your career or anything like that?
It helps so much because when I first started doing colleges, there's no doubt in my so when you do colleges, there's this thing called the National Association of Campus Activities. And it's this like giant college consortium and it's made up in all these little brackets. So there's like all these regional things. They're called NACAs and it's run by student organizations. So diversity is like there. That's the thing, because it's like you want to link up with a student group. So
right.
When I submitted to schools, I hadn't been doing comedy very long at all. Like I think I took a year off and then I was back doing it for like a year, and I submitted to a NACA through a college agent who like didn't check any credentials. I'm sure he was like, oh great, like I remember he said something about Ellen. He was like, oh yeah, yeah. So
oh, Ellen DeGeneres. Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Blonde short hair. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Click, click, click. And he was like, so we did this NACA. And I remember you have to showcase for 15 minutes. Now, when you do a college, you're supposed to do an hour. And I was like, I don't have 15 minutes. I was like, I think I have like 6 minutes. And he's like, oh, crap. But also then he was like, well, you just talk about being dyslexic and talk about being gay. Gay, dyslexic, gay, dyslexic. You're from a small town.
Oh my
gay,
God.
Dyslexic. And he was right 100% because I went out and I guess that's what my material is about then anyway. And then I remember getting schools and then I was doing like getting show dates at schools. And then I remember, and I would never have gotten into an ACA. I wouldn't have gotten a college agent and I wouldn't have gotten those schools if I wasn't gay. There's just to get in to one of those things. I remember watching a straight white guy who wasn't funny at an ACA. And I was like, okay, what is the deal? Because to get into one of these as a straight white guy, you have to be so funny. And then at the end of his act, he did a triple double flip and landed in a split, and his angle was he had like prosthetic legs and could also do splits. So I was like, oh, there we go. He's a straight white guy, but he
buried the lead,
but he has no legs. Yeah, 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 I mean, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Literally at the end, I was like, but I mean, like another straight white guy who's huge in the college market, this guy is so funny, Drew Lynch, his comedy tour, Preferred Parking comedy tour, it was him and a guy with Tourette's, and they would both be on stage. You know, it was very, they really want quote unquote diversity there. So that, and doing college is what was what maybe helped me get a, you know, an acting agent and a manager and stuff. So I would not have gotten any of that if I weren't gay.
What is the difference there between having an advantage to be gay, but then not wanting to participate on like the Netflix gay comedy?
Right.
Whatever.
And to be clear,
good question,
what's
Darren.
The irony?
Good question.
Yeah, good question. That? Yeah.
Also, they didn't ask. So it's not like I was so.
But you also said not to put up for it. So you clearly had. Right.
So the difference is you just got to get, you know, I always think of this, you always want to scale your problem. So if 1 year it's like, I didn't get into NACA. It's like, okay, I got into NACA, but I got into schools because I'm gay. And then the next year it's like, I'm doing too many of this, but you want the problem to always be like going up. So once I was not in a place where I felt like I had to do that, or and also just feeling like a little more comfortable with myself or branching out, then that's when I was like, okay, I want to be bigger than this, and this is not necessarily a part of that. So that's when I started I mean, and still sometimes it's tough. Like if I would try to not talk about being gay or address how I look, man, like I used to do Vegas a lot, the Comedy Cellar's room in Vegas. And if I didn't mention being gay there, they would look at me funny. And I would tell straight comedians that, and they'd be like, no. Like, what are you talking about? It's in your head. And only straight comedians of color would understand, or other gay comedians. Cause I'd be like, they're looking at me funny until I make fun of gay stuff. And then I feel uncomfortable because they're not laughing with me. They're laughing at me. Like I was like, so I don't,
you're not in on the joke.
I'm not in on it. And I know what's going on. And I told two buddies of mine that were straight white guys, and they're like, man, I think you're in your head. And then I remember a Muslim comedian, and we weren't buddies. I remember I was like, hey, how you feel up there? And he's like, they're looking at me funny. And I'm like, thank you. And then every comedian of a person that was not a straight white person had that experience for sure. And it's just like something you could feel. And it was very, it's not all the time, but it doesn't feel good.
Fascinating. And has that gotten easier? Is that just like, that's just how comedy is? Like,
well, the whole thing is like creating your own audience. So then you figure out who you're trying to reach out to. So then those people come, because there's been times where I've done shows where it's like, it's almost like right when I step out, it's almost like they're giving me too much. They're being right. I remember there was this show in LA I used to do. It was so fun. It was called Put Your Hands Together. And it was Rhea Butcher and Cameron Esposito had the show. I'm going to assume it was very queer.
One would assume.
One would assume. And that was probably what was tailored, and that's what would make sense. And, you know, of the variety of like, you better recycle. Like, you know. But I remember coming out on stage at that, and it would be like hyped already. And in a way where I'd be like, oh, this is amazing. But it was like, just based on how I look, it was like, ah, yeah, I'm for that. So sometimes you get too much yes, too much no, but the real progress will be in it's like, well, let's see how your act is and if I relate to that. So it should be in the middle, but I get both ends of it.
Huh. Good. I love that.
Does that make sense?
I love you.
It does. I'm so glad that we finally met. It's also kind of funny that all three of us are on Taylor Strucker's show every week.
Hell yeah.
She's
knows
amassed
how to pick that queer talent.
I know. She really has. And it's so funny because I don't, obviously, again, I'm new to the world, but Emma and I are actually one of the more active people on the Facebook page. Darren does not partake.
You don't
neither
go on
does
Facebook?
Taylor. She doesn't.
I'm on Facebook, but I'm not on that Taylor Strike. I mean, I am a member, but I can't participate.
Really?
I can't.
Emma and I are like in it.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm more active on the Instagram for sure. But yes.
Well, I didn't even know they had an Instagram.
Well, they don't have an Instagram, but my thing for my 2 hours usually is like DM me and I'll answer live questions with Strecker.
Got it.
Get feedback that way. But
smart.
I do find that like, I mean, they're nice on the page. I've got nothing against them, but like the four people that hate me are the loudest people
that I hear in my ear. I've got four that hate me.
So what do I need that for? Right. Enough people hate me. I'm fine.
Nobody hates Emma though. No, so she's okay.
In that Facebook group, I was in another Facebook group where there was some stuff and it is tough, but also normally if someone, I've noticed in Taylor's one, a lot of time the group will be like, when there is constructive criticism, I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's nice. Yep. Because it's usually, I mean, whether or not it's, you know, something to take into consideration or not, constructive criticism
I'm all for that.
Yeah. No, 100%.
That helps. That's a good balance of like who you are as a person.
Right.
Like you have to be able to take it, you know, and that's growing pains in any sort of
way.
Yes,
it is.
I kind of love all of us doing this because it's almost like mom's not here.
Right, right.
The kids.
I know,
have
we didn't talk
out.
Any shit on her. What's the point of having a podcast if you're not gonna talk shit on Taylor? I have nothing bad to say.
But other than she like never returns my text messages, but everybody knows that.
I think she doesn't like texting.
She hates it.
Yeah.
She literally marks them, like she'll read them and then just not respond. And you know, you can't like unread a text. So she'll just like forget about them.
It's the worst.
It's not like an email, you know, just forget them.
Will you tell everyone where they can find you and up like everything that's going
projects.
On.
Yeah. I mean, in the world of COVID-19, it's hard to say maybe if you're going on tour soon or anything.
Well, I've got my podcast I'm doing during Corona called Emma's Bunker. And then
listened to that one, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
You know
I appreciate
how
it.
You posted something like this was supposed to be a secret, or is that Emma's diary?
That's
I read one. That you were like, this is a secret. And I'm like, girl, I've been listening to that one.
Really? Oh, so this, I had this, like, I have an audio diary that I don't, it's very sporadic. Like, it's just, like, fun. Like, I don't edit. I'm not, like, doing all the stuff. I feel that I always am like, oh, I got to do this, got to do that. But I do love doing the diary is fun.
Anyway, sorry show. To it's, call you out, no, but please. Just I mean, to let you know.
I'm putting it out there, and then I'm like, oh, no. But, yeah, the diary is fun. On Tuesdays at 10 p.m., I'm on a show called Turdy Works on True TV, and I think I come
oh,
in this.
Oh, I interviewed her with Mary.
Did you really?
Back.
Yes.
For People yes. TV's Reality TV. And how she was gets that? On there. She was amazing. She's like this old lesbian who makes like art out of literal goose turds. And she's on a True TV show called Turdy Works with her, and her partner. And she has a whole thing. And she gets on, Mary, and she goes, you're cute. And all my producers are like, oh, shit. Yeah, she's such
a flirt.
Wait,
so Emma, what are you doing on that show?
I was a producer on it, so I produced 10 of the episodes, and then I'm on.
It's really funny. Good job.
Yeah. And then I'm on a couple of the episodes. I try to get her to talk about stuff other than turds.
Which is difficult. Yes.
Okay.
I'm not saying
all right.
I was successful.
Her most successful sold item of like the shit that she has, according to her, is like this Google turd platter. Clock. That's like, it's like 2:30, 3:30, 4:30. Fine.
I can't. Okay.
And that's
10 p.m. on
True
TV.
That's how we're going to end this episode.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Okay. We've got Emma's Bunker. When do you release those?
Yeah. I've been putting it out just Wednesdays officially, but I've just been trying to crank them out while we're in lockdown, and then I'll take it from there when this lifts. Yeah.
Emma, it was such a pleasure getting to see
you
and talk
Likewise.
To you and listen to you. Thank you so much for coming on Sizzling
Isn't
a
Thing. Thank you for having me. I appreciate
it. Thank you. I literally just witch cackled the whole time.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you for listening to Sizzling Isn't a Thing. See you next Tuesday.